Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to the RTC Weekly Download, the place for old-time radio, only the best old-time radio, and this is the spot to listen to it. Today's all about detectives, both public and private. We'll start off with the private. With The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, this is called The Soft Spot. It's from 1950.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Soft Spot.
And so much for the news from abroad. Here in Los Angeles, two persons were killed and eight injured today in three separate automobile accidents attributed directly to the thick fog that has blanketed the city ever since yesterday morning. Mm. And according to the Weather Bureau, the fog which is rolling in from the sea will be with us for...
Fog, smog, everything's cockeyed.
Hello.
Philip Marlowe, please. Earl Hanley speaking.
This is Marlowe. How are you, Mr. Hanley? How's the newspaper circulation business?
Oh, both zooming, fella. Look, Marlowe. Can you come out to my joint in Las Feliz Boulevard, 3810? I'd like you to work for me again. And you write your own ticket as usual.
No, thanks. They play too rough in your league, Hanley. Besides, it's a bum night to ride around in a cold newspaper truck watching out for hijackers.
No, Marlowe, it's nothing like that. This is personal business.
Oh?
It's an old man who's disappeared. I'd like you to find him for me.
Still a dark night.
Double your fee.
I see a light, Mr. Hanley. Outside, the city was wrapped up tight in the kind of wet ceiling zero fog that leaves you feeling damp and all alone. Hanley's joint on Los Feliz was an old English stone mansion, sprawling, smothered in ivy, and about as cozy and come hither as a scream in the night. Inside, I followed an aging round-shouldered butler whose footsteps didn't make any noise along the type of high, wide, nice, cold furnished corridor you find only in museums. When we finally arrived at Hanley's study, however, things changed. It was a small room with bright lights, heat, and a desk cluttered with friendly bric-a-brac. Hanley himself was standing against the far wall, and for a moment, the contrast was jarring because the self-made man in shirt sleeves, built like a boxcar and chewing on a cold cigar, didn't at all match the collection of stiff family photos, 1890 style, that hung on the wall behind him.
Yeah, what is it, Marlowe? Hard to find the family resemblance.
From here... Your folks, Mr. Hanley?
Yeah. Oh. And left to right, my mother, she passed on a year ago, and me as a kid. My father, a lush, and my grandfather. He claimed to have killed more Indians than ever existed. All born and raised in a lot of nothing, named Walker Falls.
Couldn't hold you, huh?
Couldn't bring me back either, even when Ma died. I was only a little tyke when I ran away, Mono. Couldn't stand my grandfather even then. Nothing but a rod and a bottle.
Bad combo. How about your father?
Oh, I wrote a few nice words to him when sister wrote me that Ma died. And I sent a fat check for flowers and a tombstone, but he never answered. Mm-hmm. Probably drank the dough up. He never could save a buck on his own, they tell me. Anyhow, enough of letting our hair down, Armando. Let's get on to business. Sit down,
sir. Oh, thanks, sure. You said someone disappeared, Mr. Hanley, an old man?
Yeah. It was a gardener here, Marlowe. Name's Cooper, John Cooper. He's 60, 65 maybe, tall and skinny. Yeah, he's got a fringe of curly hair around his ears. The rest is strictly cue ball. Yeah, he shoved off yesterday.
With what, Hanley?
yeah, you catch on fast, Phil.
You know, it's my trade.
Yeah. Well, the stuff don't amount to too much. Half a dozen fancy silver drinking glasses, those...
Goblets?
Goblets. Worth about 100 apiece, nothing that'll dent me. Also, I'm insured, of course.
Well, then the goblets mean something else.
They do. Let's call them a present from a lady.
All right, let's.
I want them back, Marlo.
Why me? Why not the insurance company or the law?
No. No, that I don't want. And if you laugh when I tell you the reason, I'm going to punch you right square in the nose. And have some scotch.
No, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, drink alone, then, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
Mm-hmm. It's this old Duck Cooper, you know. I feel sorry for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he came in here one day last week, hat in hand, looking beat as an alley cat. So I gave him a job helping one of the gardeners, but I was on to him right from the start.
What does that mean?
He was a gardener like I'm a ballet dancer.
Oh.
Yeah, I could tell. And from there on, it got worse. First couple of days, he watched me and everybody else around here pop-eyed as a shoplifter loose in Tiffany's.
But you didn't fire him?
No, no. Well, I figured a few square meals, some sleep, a little dough in his pocket, it'd calm him down. So I just put a new master padlock in my trophy room and let it go with it.
That was your mistake, huh?
Yeah, yeah. But just so you don't think I'm losing my marbles, Phil, I better tell you about another mistake. But gonna have to make this short, dinner guest shut out.
Another mistake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15 years ago, Phil, I was in a spot just like this Cooper. Yeah, I was broke, hungry, mad at the world, and in a position to do the wrong thing. I did, and I got caught. The boss understood, read me the riot act, and let me go. Right, today it's my turn.
Want to laugh? Not very much. Tell me, what have you got for me to go on?
Well, thin air. Ah, but you're good, Marla. You'll make out. The name and description I already gave you that. Mm-hmm. All right, here's the rest of it, according to the servants. One, lived somewheres around Skid Row. Mm-hmm. Two, he never touched anything that kicked harder than ginger ale. And that he went for in a big way. Three, he had a buddy in his neighborhood who was teaching him how to whittle. You know, make stuff, carving wood.
Yeah, I know. And that's it, huh?
Well, that plus the fact that he smoked these pint-sized cigars, we found a pack of them in the overalls at one. Here they are. Mm-hmm. They're called Aces Up, made in a downtown L.A. shop, also on Skid Row. Oh, the address is on the box there. Could help.
Could. Mm-hmm. Well, see what I can do, Mr. Hanley.
Okay, Marlo. Call me as soon as you get close, will you?
Sure.
Oh, and Marlo.
Yeah?
I want those goblets pretty bad, but take care of the old man, will you?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Also, Hanley, I think it's a pretty decent thing that
you'll have to excuse me, Marlo. I got to change for my guest. I'll talk to you, huh?
I followed Hanley back along the museum corridor past the guests who included a spy beautiful lady dressed in too much black, chatting with a crisp item in banker's gray flannel who looked like he'd been born holding an hors d'oeuvre. I didn't see how they could have much in common with their host. But when the big front door eased closed behind me, I forgot about them and concentrated on finding a needle in a haystack. A needle in a haystack and a fog yet. Well, the tobacco manufacturer responsible for the handmade black rope called Aces Up was my first try. His shop was a 2x4 dirty glass storefront labeled H. Andrade in dry, peeling gold foil that flaked off when I opened and closed the front door. And what had to be the proprietor was alone, rolling cigars on a rickety table that was stacked high with damp, dark tobacco leaves. He didn't look up when I described the man I was after. Asked if he'd seen him. A moment later, when he did turn his head my way to answer, I realized why.
I am sorry, senor. I don't see nobody. I am blind.
Fine start, huh? And for some cockeyed reason, like the fog or the kind of man I was after or the neighborhood of derelicts I moved through, which could have used a few sprays of sweet air, didn't get any better. Not at least for the next hour, during which I stuck to the wood carving angle and covered every possible tie-in I could think of, including a visit to a nearby home for retired men of the sea.
Looking for someone who's teaching a man to whittle.
That's right. He's teaching an old man named John Cooper. Ever hear of him?
No, can't say I have. But lots of lads here whittle. Why don't you have a chat with them?
Okay,
In the morning. They're all bedded down now, mate. Wouldn't want to pipe them out over a silly question like yours, would you?
No. No, Skipper. Let him sleep. Right there, the whittling went the way of Aces Up cigars, and I turned to my last hope. John Cooper's mania for ginger ale. However, asking about that in the cheap, noisy bars that dotted Main Street was even a sillier question. It gave all the local comics their big break.
Finally...
Straight gingerale, you say, huh? Now, let me see. I get so many orders for it, Joe. It could have been the time Carrie Nation stopped in, or was it the night some joker who was eating pig's knuckles called for a finger bowl?
Now, look, Bright Eyes. Let's work a little less on the gags and a little more on... Hey, see that guy over there in the corner booth, the little fellow whittling on that stick? You know him? Come on, come on. Here's five for your trouble. Who is he?
The name is Skeeter. Been doing his drinking and wood chopping here for 5 years.
Is he always alone?
Not always. Sometimes he has a buddy with him. Lately, an old ball he's trying to teach how to cut them poles.
Oh.
A guy who never orders nothing at all, so don't get
what
started.
What does Skeeter drink?
Skeeter?
Yeah.
Why, he always has bourbon and... Yeah, bourbon and ginger ale.
Uh-huh.
The guy you want must drink Skeeter's chases, huh?
That figures, thanks.
Well, don't mention it, Screwball. A profitable pleasure.
Only with thine eyes. Making me nervous. What is it, mister? Lose something?
Sort of. John Cooper.
Oh.
Have you seen him, Skeeter? He told me I could get in touch with him through you here at this bar. Said you were a friend.
And I am. Say... Is he in trouble, mister?
Maybe. What makes you ask?
Because he didn't show tonight. And last night he was all out of sorts. Had something on his mind. Couldn't pay attention to the lesson I was giving him. Is it bad?
No, not if I can get next to him in a hurry. Tell me, Skeeter, do you know where he stays?
Sure do. A rat hole over on South Spring number 2. Hey, wait.
Huh?
You ain't a cop, are you?
Oh, no. A friend, Skeeter.
Yeah? What kind of cigars does he smoke? Friend.
Ace is up. Do I pass?
Uh-huh. It's 210 South Spring.
210 South Spring. Uh-huh. Thanks. So long, Skeeter. I'll get in touch if I need any more help.
Hey.
Sorry, buddy. I was in a hurry. I didn't see you.
You lost up my shoeshine, sweetheart. Where you running?
Get your mitts off. I said I was sorry. What do you want? The dime you invested in the shiny, your ears slapped down into the pockets of that zoot suit. Which?
Okay. We'll let it go.
I thought we would. So long again, Skeeter, and thanks. After I made my call to my client and told him how we stood, I drove the half a dozen blocks to 210 South Spring Street. The place was the kind of stale-smelling, beer-can-littered, dingy, two-story affair that made you wonder if the garbage collector got around anymore. When I knocked on the cracked glass front door that sported a laundry shirt cardboard that said rooms for rent and eyebrow pencil, I was ready for anything. And that's what I got. Puffy red eyes, bad teeth, smell of cheap gin. All in a cold cream, shiny face that was half hidden by enough bleached blonde hair to stuff an ottoman.
Hey, handsome, I can catch my death of cold here. What's up?
You the landlady?
No, she passed out. Uh-huh. I was drinking with her, so I'll do. What do you want?
An old man named John Cooper. Is he in?
The skinny duffer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so. I seen him earlier. It's that door back there, the one on the right. Hey! Hey, jockey! What do you want back there? Where are you going? This way, mister.
Hey, was that Cooper's room the fella just came out of, last on the right?
Yeah, that's it. That louse probably swiped your friend's bottle. He's the kind. Empty.
Too bad.
You know, he drinks you under the table and then takes what's left.
Which in this case would be ginger ale. Cooper doesn't drink.
Yeah? Oh, what do you know about that? Hey! Hey, you got company? Hey, Cooper! Lights on.
Try the knob, huh?
Yeah, you're kind of anxious.
Yeah.
It's your game, mister. He doesn't drink, huh? What do you call that spread eagle position on the floor? Napping?
No. Not with that knife in his chest. Huh? I call that murder.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, one of your favorite laugh shows and stars, My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball, will return to CBS this Saturday night. Formerly heard on Sunday nights, Lucille Ball and Her Favorite Husband will now be heard on most of these same CBS stations every Saturday night. Be listening this Saturday when Lucille plunges that favorite husband into a mad and merry mix-up over who is the town's best or worst-dressed man. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Soft Spot.
old man's body was rumpled in death like a discarded bundle of rags, loosely pinned at the center with a knife that had killed him. And as the frowsy blonde gradually realized he was dead, the look on her face was dumb, slack-mouthed revulsion.
Gee, death's an awful-looking thing, ain't it?
Ain't it?
Hey, don't touch him, mister. It don't seem decent to...
Decency is strictly relative, sister. There's a scratch here on his neck. Like a woman's fingernail raked it.
Huh? Where? Hey, his locket's gone.
Locket?
Yeah.
This old guy wore a locket?
Yeah, I seen it on him yesterday when the cops hauled off that redhead from upstairs. This old guy was shaving and he came out in the hall without his shirt on to watch, and I seen the locket around his neck.
What did it look like?
It was a little square one on a gold chain. Now it ain't there.
Ripped off and in a hurry. That much old gold's not worth murder, even in this backwash. Baby, what do you use for closets?
Closets? Are you kidding? In this dump, you hang your stuff on the plumbing and like it. Why?
Well, then there's no place here that six big silver goblets could be hiding, I guess.
You couldn't hide a shot glass in this joint. Not for long, anyway.
Well, the old boy traveled light. There's nothing here but...
What? Hey, what'd you find?
Hmm?
What'd you find?
Oh, this newspaper story on the table. Torn out of the day before yesterday's paper, it says. Nelson Root, wealthy Beverly Hills broker, dies in a freak car smash-up. Root is survived by his wife, former showgirl Evelyn Lansing.
Now, what do you suppose that old guy was saving that for? To have sold his shoes with, maybe?
Oh, sure. Now, look, as long as you get your brain in gear, tell me where I can find that guy who ran out of here.
Chalky?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, mister, I don't want to get mixed up in this. I just live here and...
I'm back here! You're already mixed up in it.
Yeah, but that Chalky's awful hard, mister. I wouldn't want to cross
him. Now, listen, that old man there was murdered. Remember, it's for keeps. You tell me here and now or the cops down at headquarters. Come on, where does he live?
I don't know for sure. I think I heard once he's got a shack in the alley behind some warehouse over on San Pedro Street.
Which warehouse?
I don't know. Honest, I don't know. Hey, you might find out at Dooley's Diner. I think he shoots craps over there.
Okay. Thanks, baby. And do yourself another favor before you cool off. Call the police. It took a solid hour of devious back alley trails before I finally broke down the intimidated loyalty of the Skid Row Brotherhood with a well-placed $10 bill and got a bona fide lead. The thick fog that crawled along the alley. Chalky's shack had all the welcome home look of a wet gutter. It was wedged in under the hulking concrete base of an overpass like dirt under a giant fingernail. Sick yellowish light oozed out through a single tiny window, too murky to see into. So I did the next best thing and hoped that he was alone inside.
Who's there? Who is it?
I got a tip for you, Chalky. Dooley sent me. It's about the Johns. They're after you.
Cops. Hey, wait a minute. What's the tip, fellow? What? Hey, where are you?
Right here, Chalky. Now stay where you are, Buster. I'll kick your head off.
Hey, what's the idea?
I want fast answers, Chalky. Nice straight ones. Why'd you knife the old guy tonight?
Knife the old... Hey, who are you? What's the idea?
I want answers, not questions, Chalky. Why'd you do it?
I didn't kill him. I never used the shiv. He was already dead when I went in there. I lifted that locket off to the old coot, that's all, so help me.
Give me that locket.
I ain't got it no more. Ma Murphy's got it now. I hocked it already. She gave me 3 1/4 on it. Look, I got a buck left. If you want that,
you're
you can have it.
You're lying, Grifter. You're killing old man to get the trinket for 2 cents.
No, no, I didn't. I seen that guy with the big ears run out of the old coot's room, so I went up to take a look.
Wait a minute. Guy with big ears?
Yeah. He was a zoot suitor. I never seen him around before. I remember them flaps of his.
Oh.
He ran out of the old guy's joint in a big steam. What? Hey, now listen, buddy. He was the guy who done it honest. Ain't no doubt about it. He was the guy. Hey. Now, wait a minute. You ain't a friend of his, are you?
He is again. No reason, unless he was telling me.
Oh, now listen, buddy. I never put the finger on the guy before in my life. But when it's protecting my own hide, I gotta...
Yeah, I could have been the finger. So long, Chalky, and drop dead.
It was still foggy outside, but my own personal fog began to lift. Big Ears must have been tailing me, overheard me on the phone, and got to the old man first. But why? Why the clipping that old man Cooper had about Nelson Root's accident? Nelson Root survived by a widow. A widow? Holy smoke! Callahan of the Daily Star gave me half a dozen pictures of Evelyn Lansing Root. From her early cheesecake days right on up to the role of widow in mourning. There was no doubt left. She was the lady in black, one of my client's dinner guests. By the time I'd driven through the fog out to Los Feliz again and up to Hanley's sprawled-out house, I'd lined the whole business up to where it made a twisted kind of sense. There was nothing left to do but nup it in his lap. I found him in his study.
Well, what's wrong, Marlowe?
Maybe you better tell me.
Tell you what. Did you find Cooper or didn't you?
Sure. I found him. I found him dead.
What? The old man is dead.
You know perfectly well he's dead.
Come on, Marlowe. Sit down. Have a drink. You'll be.
No, thanks. I've covered a lot of ground tonight, most of it pretty slimy. Led me in a big circle that started here and ends here, and now it's late. We're both fairly intelligent. Let's give each other a break, shall we?
Go on.
Let's suppose that a man was in love with a woman, a married woman, who was tired of her husband.
So? So, she and the man arranged for the husband to die in a freak accident.
Yeah, that's right. And let's suppose a strange old geezer overheard them plan it and then disappeared.
Oh, that's rough. I imagine they'd have to find him and shut him up, wouldn't they? Or he'd blackmail him to death.
Possibly. And how do you suppose they go about that, Hanley? Hire a private detective, maybe? Give him a song and a dance about a theft, a trumped-up story about some missing silver goblets, maybe?
Maybe. Only he'd be much too reputable to do their killing.
Yeah, so they'd hire a professional killer, one with big ears, to follow the detective. And when the old man was located, the killer would step in and go to work with a knife.
And then vanish completely. Because he'd be a good professional man.
Well, Hanley?
Well, Marlowe? Oh, yes, that's a great yarn. Yeah, but a little fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, utterly.
Oh, good boy, that's the way I figure. Too weird to take seriously.
Only I'm going to make it stick.
Yeah? Marlowe, you try to embarrass me with a crackpot theory like that, and I'll make you the laughingstock of this state, do you hear? I'll have you hooted right out of the business. Because you don't have one shred of proof, Marlowe, and you'll never be able to get one. And what's more, you know it, don't you? Don't
get your hands off me, Hanley!
Sure. Oh, come on, Phil. Come on. Let's have that drink now, and then you go on home and forget all about this, huh? Sure. Oh, after all, the old jerk was just a skid row drifter. He didn't belong any place. Who'll ever miss him? He was nobody, Phil. Get it? Mr. Nobody. He's no loss, so let's just forget it. Marlowe! Marlowe, wait a minute! Marlowe, come back here!
I had to get out. What made it even worse to us that I knew he had me. I couldn't even begin to prove the first word of what I knew was the truth. I couldn't sleep with it either. That was why an hour later I leaned against a lamppost back on Skid Row again and looked across a lifeless intersection through the eddying fog at the gaunt flophouse where the old man had died.
Well, a wayfaring stranger in the night. Hiya, pal.
Beat it.
Wait a minute, wayfaring stranger. Couldn't you accommodate me to the extent of a match, or would that break your back?
Here. Keep him.
Thanks. Why don't you go home, pal?
Hmm?
Nothing happens here on Cooper Street after 2 in the a.m. As a matter of fact, nothing happens anywhere anymore.
Cooper Street. Cooper. That's one right out of the book. I'll bet $50 on it. 9 out of 10, they'll take the name of a street.
Huh? Who?
Never mind. You live around here?
You're kidding.
Where's Ma Murphy's pawn shop?
Hey, easy. Watch the lapels, pal.
Well, come on. Where is it?
Ma's joint is 3 blocks down on Filbert, downstairs, middle of the block. But there's no romance there, pal.
Notion to call the cops. The idea. Getting me out of a warm bed in the middle of the night to give you a look at a cheap little locket. And all on a dizzy hunch, you said.
Yeah, a wild one. You know the locket I mean, Ma. Come on, trot it out.
That'll do you no good anyway, sonny. Can't sell it to you for 30 days yet. The law, you know.
Yeah, sure. But you've been winking at the law so long, you're blind in one eye, Ma.
Is that so? Well, here you are. See? Is it hot, Sonny?
I'll know in a minute. It's the inside I want to see if it's... Ooh.
What is it, Sonny? Is something the matter?
Yeah, my hunch paid off, Ma. It's hot, all right. Hot enough to burn a guy to death. Here's my card. I'm taking this along.
What? No, well, hold on a minute, you. Hey, stop. I'll call the cops.
Don't bother, honey. I'll call him myself. A The lights were still on in Earl Hanley's study, so I pulled over and parked on the street and went up the walk on foot. And as I moved to the door, the fog slid around me in thick swirls. When Hanley answered, his face was hard and ugly. He had a gun in his hand.
Our business is over with, Marlowe.
Not quite, Hanley.
What do you want?
I got a tag for our fantastic little Just Suppose story.
You're either drunk or stupid, Marlowe. I warned you once, now beat it.
Not till you've heard my punchline, Hanley. It goes like this. Suppose a wife died after 40 years of marriage and left her husband alone. A lonely, lost old man who's mellowed with the years. Suppose he doesn't have much time left himself and he knows it, but he's got an obsession. An old unhappiness he wants to set straight. He wants to see a fella, not cause any trouble. Just be around where he can look at him now and then.
Come on, get to the point.
Sure, this is the point, Hanley. Huh? Here, take it.
Where did you get this locket, Marlowe? Where?
Just suppose it has your picture in one side and your mother's in the other. What then?
I gave this locket to my mother when I was a kid. Where did you get it? Come on, tell me.
It came from around the neck of a harmless, sentimental old man who was stabbed to death tonight by a hired killer. He'd never have turned you in or blackmailed you, Hanley. Because that old man was your father.
I had my own father killed. I ordered my own father's death. I didn't know it.
Yeah. Mr. Nobody, remember? Come on, Hanley, give me the gun. We can go now. Hanley went quietly. All the way, he kept a little locket clenched in his fist. But as I led him up the stairs of police headquarters, he broke loose long enough to shatter both his hands against the marble pillar. He wound up in a straitjacket. But it didn't matter much because when they picked up Evelyn Root, the lady in Too Much Black, she filled in the rest of the story, including a lead to Big Ears. When it was over and I was sitting outside in my car alone in the fog that pressed close against the windows, I could see nothing of the city. Nothing but the soft, swimming white mist which hid the black outlines of Skid Row. Funny thing, you know. Some people can get out of Skid Row, but Skid Row will never get out of some people.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Richard Sanville and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Bill Boucher, Vivi Janis, Verna Felton, Edgar Berrier, Peter Leeds, Nestor Paiva, and Paul Dubov. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time there were five masks. One for greed, one for cowardice, one for cruelty, and one for deceit. And they all covered a murder. But it was the fifth mask that really counted, because it uncovered the killer.
For some easy-to-listen-to music on Sunday afternoons, be sure to hear those favorites, the Symphonette and the Choraleers, which return to CBS this Sunday afternoon. The Symphonette brings you musical favorites from the lighter classics, played by a group of outstanding instrumentalists. The Choraleers sing rousing marches, popular songs of the day, and familiar music of the past. Hear the Symphonette and the Choraleers this Sunday and every Sunday afternoon on most of these same CBS stations.
To hear each and every star, leave your dials where they are, 'cause this is CBS, the star's address. Yes, CBS, the star's address.
Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, where next week you will hear Philip Marlowe an hour and a half later, Eastern Daylight Saving Time, on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Now that we've seen the private detective in action, we're going to see the public detective in action. This is Dragnet, the show everybody remembers from television, repeats, and this is called The Big Layout. from 1953.
Sound off for Chesterfield. Chesterfield, the only cigarette in America to give you premium quality in both regular and king size, brings you Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a narcotics detail. A steady flow of heroin has been making its way into your city. Most of it has fallen into the hands of teenagers. You don't know the source or the head man of the operation. Your job? Stop it. The modern way to sell cigarettes is the Chesterfield way. Premium quality in both regular and king size. And we're the only one that gives it to you.
Premium quality in a cigarette means the world's best tobaccos, the best ingredients, the best cigarette paper. Only Chesterfield gives you this premium quality in both popular sizes.
King size Chesterfield contains tobaccos of better quality and higher price than any other king-size cigarette. Well, that's certainly important to every king-size smoker. Of course, it's the same fine tobacco as in regular Chesterfield. There is absolutely no difference, except that king-size Chesterfield gives you more than a fifth longer smoke.
Yes, the modern way to sell cigarettes is the Chesterfield way. Premium quality, both regular and king-size.
Chesterfield is much milder. Chesterfield is best for you.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, April 6th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of narcotics detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Kearney. My name's Friday. I'd just gotten off work, and I'd gotten a call from a friend who wanted to see me. It was 5:46 p.m. when I got to my apartment house. Apartment 12.
Hi, Joe.
Oh, Ed. Just getting ready to go in. Come on in.
Got you.
Go ahead.
Thanks.
Sit down.
You got a date or something?
No, no, it's all right. I just thought I'd get something to eat and then maybe take in the show. What'd you want to see me about?
It's about Gary, Joe.
Your boy?
Yeah, I don't know quite how to say it.
Yeah, well, you sounded pretty upset on the phone, Ed.
I was, Joe. I still am. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, come on, what's it all about?
It was all I could do to keep my hands off him. I never felt like that with anybody before, but I did with Gary. I wanted to strangle him.
All right, now what's he done, Ed?
He's a dope addict, Joe.
Well, that's a pretty serious thing to say, Ed. Are you sure about that?
I am now. First, I couldn't believe it, but tonight, Ellen and I went through his room. We found this. Here.
Uh-huh.
Open it. See?
Yeah. Looks like a layout.
I couldn't find any drugs in it. I know that he's using them, though.
Spoon, eyedropper, needle. Yeah, everything's here. Where'd you find this, Ed?
In his room. Had it hidden up on the shelf in his closet. I found it tonight. I didn't know what to do, Joe. Helen's been crying all day. She's almost out of her mind. You were the only one I could think of coming to. Who do you talk to when you find out your son's an addict?
Well, now, Ed, are you sure this is his in the first place, that he's been using it?
Yeah, I'm sure. I never would have believed it. Not Gary. There's no reason for it. We've given the kid everything he wanted. There's nothing he didn't have. At home, Helen and I have always tried to understand his problems. Always looked at them like they were important. Everything. We gave him everything. Now this. I don't know what to do, Joe. I got no place to turn. There's nothing I can do. Maybe you can figure a way. Maybe you can't. I don't much care anymore. I just know that I can't see him again. Not for a while. I'm afraid, Joe. I'm real afraid.
All right, now, let's take it easy, Ed. We'll work this out some way.
You don't know what it's like, Joe. You can't. To feel like this and to know you'll do it. What? I see him again, Joe. I'm going to kill him.
I'd known Ed Field for the past 7 years. I'd met him when we were conducting an investigation while I was assigned to Bunco Division. His testimony had been instrumental in breaking up a gang of shoplifters. Since then, we'd become very good friends. He lived just down the street from my apartment, and on occasion, we got together for an evening. I knew his wife, and I'd met his 18-year-old son, Gary. The boy was a senior in high school, and as Ed had told me many times, his grades were well above average. The Field family was moderately well-to-do. Their home wasn't luxurious, but it was good-sized. To look at the boy, there was nothing that would cause anybody to think that he might be a user. 6:12 p.m., Field and I arrived at his home. Helen Field was waiting for us. She was a nice-looking woman in her early 40s. She let us in the house and showed us to the living room. It was obvious that she'd been crying.
I don't know how to thank you for coming over, Joe. I guess Ed told you what it's all about.
Yes, Helen. Did Gary home yet?
No, I haven't heard a word from him since he left.
I didn't tell Joe what happened this afternoon. Thought it'd be better if he got it from you.
Oh, all right. You want to sit down, Joe?
Sure.
I'll tell you.
Thank you.
Well, Gary came home this afternoon about 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
Walked into the house and went right to his room. He didn't say a thing to me. First, I thought that maybe he might be sick. I went to the room and he'd locked the door. I knocked, asked him if he was all right.
Yeah.
He called through the door that he was okay and for me to leave him alone. I asked him if there was anything I could do. You know, if he was sick, he might need something.
I understand. What'd he say?
Told me to get away. To leave him alone and get off his back. Those were his exact words. Leave him alone and get off his back.
Mm-hmm.
About 20 minutes later, he unlocked the door and came out. He seemed to feel fine. He came over and kissed me and said he was sorry about what he'd said. Said that he hadn't been feeling well and that he'd said those things without meaning them.
Mm-hmm.
I told him that he ought to wait until I could take his temperature. He said there was nothing wrong for me to get out of his way, that he had some business to take care of and be home for dinner. I tried to stop him from leaving, and he pushed me aside. He knocked me down.
Get my hands on him, I'll teach him.
He stood there for a minute, and I thought he was going to cry. But he just turned around and walked out.
Were you any idea where he might have gone? What this business was that he was going to take care of?
No, not the slightest idea.
You can see what we're up against, Joe. I'm afraid to even see the boy.
Yeah. When did you first figure that he might be using narcotics?
When I came home, Helen told me what had happened. I thought about what would make the kid do a thing like this. The more I thought about it, the more there had to be only one reason. That's when Helen and I went through his room and found that kit.
Mm-hmm. Has the boy been ill at all lately? Under a doctor's care? Something that you might not know about?
No. I'm sure that if he was, we'd know about it.
I want to see you, Gary.
Yeah, I'll be right with him.
I want to see you right now.
You'll have to wait.
Maybe there's something wrong with your ears, son. I'm not going to take that from you.
Please, Ed, don't do something you're going to regret.
Now listen, Helen, that boy's 18 years old. For all that time, we've done everything we could for him. We've given him a lot more than most boys his age have. I'm not going to stand by and see it all blow up just because he's a kid. That's no excuse. I want an answer for all this. What he's been doing, what happened this afternoon. I want those answers, and I want them now.
Remember, he's only a boy.
And I'm getting sick of that, too.
Where is it?
Now, listen, boy, I know what's been going on. I want to talk to you about it.
I don't want you to lecture me. All I want to know is where's the kit.
Take it easy, son.
What are you doing here?
I asked him to come over.
You didn't turn me in, huh?
Your dad asked me to come over to see if I could help here.
I don't need nothing from you, cop. I want the layout. Where is it?
You aren't going to use that anymore.
I want the layout. I got to have it. Where is it?
Please, Gary, don't get your father any more mad than he is.
I don't care how sore he is or how sore he gets. I want the layout. I want it now. I can't think of any more simple way to say it. If I have to take it away from you, then I'll do it your way.
You lousy bum. I'll teach you to talk to
me. All right, take it easy, Gary. This isn't going to get you anywhere now. Come on, settle down, both of you.
Get out of here. Get him out of here. Joe, I swear I'll break him in two.
Please, Ed. Joe, do something.
Let him go. It's about time he found out I'm old enough to call things my way. Go on, let him go. I'm not afraid of him. I'm not afraid of you either, cop. I'm not worried about anybody. All I want is that kit. I gotta have it. I got it. I'll give it to me and we can talk then. I gotta have it fixed. I got it.
Joe. Do something, please.
All right, come on. Sit down, boy. This has gone far enough here.
Let's get a few things straight. You're not going to have any more of that. We'll see that a doctor looks at you. He'll do what he can, but you've had it. No more narcotics for you, and I'll face it. You want me to tell you where you stand? You're a user. Any way you slice it, this had to happen.
I don't want anything from you. Why don't you just leave me alone?
I can't do that. Let me see your arm. Come on, roll up your sleeve.
Do what he says, Gary.
Yeah. Both arms, huh?
I'd take a joy pop once in a
while. Now, don't con me, Gary. You got it bad, and it's going to get worse. You didn't get that arm from chipping in with the stuff. The kit we found, you don't need to lay out that big to joy pop. You've been mainlining it for quite a while. I know it, and so do you. You holding now? Come on, boy, answer me. You holding now?
Yeah.
Well, let's have it.
I'm not going to give it to you.
You got no choice, son. Either give it to me or I'll take it.
All right, here it is.
How big a habit you got?
Not big.
How big?
A couple of bucks.
Now, come on, boy. Let's have a straight answer.
$25 a day?
$25 a day. That's a lot of narcotics, isn't it?
It's what it takes.
Where's it come from? Come on. Who's your connection?
You maybe got me, but I'm not going to be a fink. You got to let me go at that.
I can't do that. Now, where'd you get this stuff?
How about that doctor? You going to do something about
we'll
that?
We'll talk to him.
Yeah, talking to him ain't going to do any good. I got to have a fix. I'm going to fall apart. Come on, now, be a pal. Let me have a fix. I'll tell you all about it then. You got the kit? You got the stuff? Come on, be a sport.
No,
huh?
Go. You can't do it. Come on, let's go downtown.
You're going to take him to jail, Joe?
I'll take him down to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. A doctor can look at him there. We're going to have to hold him for a while, Miss Field.
Why'd you do it, Gary? Why? Can't you tell me? Is it something your father and I have done? There's got to be a reason. What is it? Oh, please, Gary, tell me.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Can we see him after he gets there, Joe?
Yeah, I'll call Dad.
Don't you want to say goodbye to your mother, son?
Why? It wouldn't prove anything.
Yeah, I guess that's the way you'd look at it.
I broke the law, now they're going to make a convict out of me. I didn't call him, you did. How are you going to explain that to her? You turn your own son in. How are you going to tell her about it? I hope you're real happy now.
I'm not proud of it, son. There's one thing I'd like to ask.
Yeah?
What have you done to her?
8:30 p.m. I called Frank Smith and filled him in on what had happened. He said that he'd meet me at Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. I took young Gary Field down with me and had a doctor check him over. After that, the boy was taken to the narcotics division, and Frank and I talked to him.
I don't know how to tell you any better. There isn't any other way to say it. I'm not going to give you any names.
That's not going to help you any, son.
So it won't help me. It won't get any of my friends in trouble.
Well, you've got great friends, haven't you? Now, where'd you get the money to take care of your habit, Gary?
I earned it.
Where?
I work.
Where'd you work?
Look, it's getting late. That stuff the doctor gave me didn't do any good. I still need a fix now. I'm getting sick. Do what you got to do. Let's get this over with.
Now, look, this is going to be the same in the morning, son. We're going to keep asking questions till you come up with the right answers.
Look, cop, I don't want any favors from you. Now, leave me alone.
We're only trying to help you, boy.
Oh, get off my side. Now, I need nothing from you. You saw your duty and you did it. That makes you a big man, huh? I know you'll both make lieutenant. Now, beat it,
all right, that's enough of that. Now, there's a couple of things we'd like to set you straight on. Maybe help you to figure where you stand in this.
Oh, here it comes. What do? Give you a license to preach when they hand you the badge?
That's enough of that, youngster.
Come on, get off my back, cop. If my old man hadn't turned fink, you'd never have got me.
Where are you going?
I'm getting out of
here. Now, sit down. Sit down. All right, young fella, you want to be a big man? That's the way it's going to be. I'm going to tell you that you get no special treatment here because I know your parents. You'll be treated just like any other user. You're getting a little of the edge because you're a youngster. There's not a pound of honesty or integrity in your distorted mind. The simple way would be to drop you in a cell and let you sweat out the cure, let you fall apart if you had to. Let me tell you this. We're going to get the connection that's been supplying you, and then we're going to get the man behind him. I don't much care about them, but I do care about the kids around you. You've got a big habit. It takes a lot of money to keep up a habit like that. I've seen kids like you before, and there's only so many ways to get that money. You steal it or you start pushing narcotics yourself. I don't think you're stealing, so you've got to be pushing it. That means that you probably got other kids hooked on it, other youngsters that have got trouble because of you. Mules that are dragging your wagon for you. Your folks will maybe forgive you for what you've done to them, but they'll never be able to buy what you did to the other kids. You had a chance to help yourself and help the rest of them. You had a chance to do something good for somebody else, and you wouldn't take it. Well, you're playing it smart, big boy. Keep playing it that way when you end up in a jail cell, will you?
You through, cop?
Yeah, I'm through.
Fine, let me get some sleep, huh?
Let's go, Frank.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action. Friends, you'll remember some months ago, we read you our first report, the 6 months report on the effects of smoking. Then more recently, we read you the 8 months report. Now, here is the latest one. The full 10 months report confirms again. The group examined showed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses from smoking Chesterfields. This from a medical specialist who is making regular bi-monthly examinations of a group of people from various walks of life. 45% of them have smoked Chesterfield for an average of over 10 years. After 10 full months, the specialist reports he observed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses of the group from smoking Chesterfield. That's the report. Buy much milder Chesterfield, regular or king size. The cigarette that's best for you.
Gary Field was taken to the main jail and booked. Frank and I went back to the office to fill out the arrest reports. The next day, Wednesday, April 7th, we began to talk to Gary's friends and teachers. From all of them, we got the same story. Until 6 months before, the boy had been a model student. He was always at the top scholastically in each of his classes. He was a member of several honorary student organizations and had twice been nominated for president of his class. Then, apparently without reason, the boy's personality had changed. He stopped taking an interest in his schoolwork. Several of his teachers told us that he wouldn't have gotten passing grades at the end of the semester. He dropped out of the service organizations at school. From some of his teachers, we got the names of his close friends. Talks with them netted us little. They told us that Gary had dropped out of the crowd of youngsters that he'd been running with and had taken up with new friends. They told us that they didn't see much of him after school, that he'd gotten into fights with other students on several occasions, and that after a period of time, they'd stopped asking him to their functions. None of them were able to give us the names of his new friends. We checked with the neighborhood merchants. Most of them knew Gary. They said that he'd worked for them after school, but they hadn't seen him for several months. We asked them if they could help us locate his friends. They told us that they had seen him in the company of one particular man on several occasions, but they couldn't identify him for us. We got a description of the man, but it meant nothing to us or to the other members of the narcotics division. Photographs of known narcotic suspects were shown to the parents of Gary Field and to the storekeepers around the school. They couldn't identify any of them. 2 days passed. Friday, April 8th. We got a call from the field boy. Frank and I went over to see him.
What'd you want to see us about, Gary?
I wanted to tell you I've had it.
What's that mean?
That I want to tell you about it.
What's the matter? You been sick?
A little. That's not why I called you, though. They treated me all right here, but I got to thinking.
All right, go ahead.
I used to read in the papers where the kids would turn themselves in or get caught and cop out. All about how they realized what they'd done. Always seemed like a lot of phony sob sister stuff. I know different now. I know what I've done. I know I got to stand for it. I'm not asking any favors because I know that I've done nothing to call for. I'm not trying to be a hero or a martyr. I just want to help get this thing cleaned up.
One thing I'd like to know, Gary.
What's that?
What made you get started on this stuff? You seem like a kid that has everything you want. You don't look like a kid who'd fall for it.
Who knows? I'd give you 1,000 reasons they still wouldn't add. I guess I just wanted to be top man all the way around.
How'd you get on it?
Started lushing it up, then the tea, then the heroin. That's the way it runs, isn't it?
Most of the time.
I didn't figure I'd ever be hooked. Thought it couldn't happen to me. How wrong you can be.
How long you had the big habit?
About 6 months. Chippied with it about the same time before then.
Where'd you get the money?
I guess we had to get to that. Huh?
That's right. Where'd you get it?
Well, I got some kids pushing this stuff for me. Worked for a while. Wasn't enough. By that time, the kids were hooked themselves. I was the only connection they had. They had to do business with me or do without it.
Yeah.
I told them that if they couldn't pay me in cash, I'd take merchandise. They'd bring it. I'd sell it. That way we both came out all right. They got their H. I got mine.
You mean you got them to steal, that it?
Yeah, I guess so. I never asked where they got the stuff. I just took it and sold it. That and the stuff they sold for me. I may not.
These kids pushing H for you?
No. Well, they're shoving tea. I sell it to them for 4 bits a stick. They get up to $1.50 for it.
You know where they peddle it?
No, I never asked. All I was interested in was if I got mine.
All right, give us their names, will you?
Guess that's the only way, huh?
That's the only way.
Okay, I'll give them to you.
How about your connection? Who's he?
Guy named Jack.
Jack who?
I don't know. Honest, I really don't.
Where'd you meet him?
Drive-in downtown.
Where?
Drive-in at the corner of Reno and Vernon.
How do you set up the meet?
I just go in there between 10 and midnight, park the car and order coffee. He comes over to the car.
You mean that he's always there at that time, huh?
Usually is.
Is he your only source?
Yeah.
Anyone else pushing it around there?
No, as far as I know. I think he's the only one in the operation.
All right, you'd be willing to arrange a meet with him so we can pick him up?
Yeah, I'll do it.
All right, fine.
Sure want to see the folks. I got so much to make up for.
That's right, you have.
Don't think I'll live long enough to do it all.
A.M. We got a description of the suspect known as Jack and also the names and addresses of the teenagers involved. Frank and I contacted the juvenile authorities and gave them the information. We went back to our office and had Gary Field check our files of known narcotic suspects. He was unable to give us an identification on Jack. 11:56 a.m. We took the boy to his home and talked with his parents. 12:30 p.m. Frank, Gary Field, and I drove to the corner of Vernon and Reno to check over the drive-in restaurant. It was set up in the usual way with a parking area around the main building for car service. In the rear of the lot was a building housing a cocktail bar, and there were parking spaces in front of that for the bar customers. As we drove past the place, Gary told us that he usually parked around the side of the main building and that this Jack came from the direction of the bar. He was unable to tell us whether the suspect drove a car or not. The plan was for Gary to introduce me as a narcotics buyer who was trying to get a local connection. It was agreed that because of the size of the buy I was to make, it would be necessary for me to deal with the head of the organization. 11:05 p.m., Gary and I got into my car and we drove to the drive-in. Frank followed us in a police unit. We arrived at the meet at 11:14 p.m. Frank stayed in the background and we waited. The suspect failed to make an appearance. The next night, the plan was repeated. Again, nothing. Sunday, April 10th, 10:05 p.m. We arrived at the drive-in. We waited. 11:05 p.m., 11:15, 11:30. No sign of the suspect. Midnight, 12:04 p.m.
Looks like he isn't going to be here.
I thought you said he usually showed up, didn't you?
I don't know what happened. He was always here before.
You sure you got the right driving?
Look, Mr. Friday, I know what you're thinking, but I'm telling the truth.
Yeah, you know all this is kind of tough to buy, don't you? Three nights and he isn't here?
I don't understand. He was always here before. Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Hold it. Yeah, that's him coming over from the bar.
All right, which one? There's a couple of people coming out there.
The big one. See in the gray suit, hat?
Yeah. You sure that's this Jack?
Positive, Mr. Friday.
All right, now you look. You know what you're going to do. Don't let on that anything's wrong here. Remember that nothing's going to happen to you.
I'll remember.
All right, now hold on. He's coming over.
Hi, kid.
Hi, Jack. Been looking for you. Where you been?
All right. Who's a friend?
Oh, yeah. I want to talk to you about him. He wants to do business with you.
What are you talking about? What business?
Look, Jack, he's all right. I know it. You think I'd have brought him here if I didn't know it?
Oh, he's all right. He's a friend of yours. You know the bit, any friend of yours. I don't know what to talk about businesses. I don't know what you're doing here, but I'm here for a cup of coffee.
Better let me talk to him alone.
What are you trying to prove, bringing the guy here? Who is he?
Friend of mine.
I told you once, I told you 1,000 times. Don't ever bring nobody with you, haven't I told you, huh?
Oh, yeah, but he's okay. He wants to make a buy, a big one.
Crazy kid, you told him about it?
Look, he's okay, I know it. Jack, we both stand to do all right from this. I kind of figured if he bought from you, you might give me a little piece of it. You know, sort of say thanks for the business.
How long you known this guy?
Long time.
How long?
A couple of years.
How come I never seen him before?
He doesn't hang around this part of town.
Well, what's he doing here now?
Like I said, trying to make a buy.
Where'd you meet him?
Before I met you, I used to buy stuff from him. He moved out of town, went up north, does business up there. Last couple of days, I couldn't get in touch with you. I ran into him. He fixed me up. And then he told me he wanted to buy. Right away, I thought of you.
All right, I'll talk to him. But I ain't making no deal.
You just talk to him. You'll find out everything's okay.
All right. You let me do the talking.
Joe, this is Jack, the fellow I was telling you about.
Hi.
Hi. Kidder tells me you're down on business, all right?
Yeah, I'm looking around.
Nice place, L.A. A lot of business to do here. What line you?
Whatever pays me.
Where you from?
Up north.
Mm-hmm. How long you known Gary here?
Now, you listen to me. I haven't got all night to stand around here and guzzle his stale coffee with you. The kid told you what I want. Now, it boils down to one simple question. You want to do business or don't you?
You're going kind of fast, aren't you?
I haven't got a lot of time.
I don't like to deal that way.
All right, kid, let's get out of here. Should have known better than to figure on dealing with a small-time operator. I told you that before.
What do you mean by that?
You read it any way you want. Well, let's go, son. See you around, mister.
Hey, hold on. No need to get sore about it. Just have to be careful. You know how it is.
Now, you listen. I was shoving horse when you were playing with marbles. I've outgrown the kid games. I thought I could make a buy. I see I was wrong.
Maybe not.
What?
I said maybe we could do business.
I gotta have it tonight.
How much you need?
I need an ounce. It's gotta be good.
Mm-hmm. I haven't got that much with me.
How much have you got?
I only got 12 bindles with me.
How much?
You gotta understand, this is good stuff.
How much?
Now, look, this is better than you can find any place else.
All right, let's quit playing, huh? What's the tab on it?
$10 a bindle.
All right, I'll take the 12. How soon can you have the rest of it?
When do you want it?
I told you I was in a hurry. Don't you hear good?
Yeah, maybe tomorrow night.
All right, that'll have to do. If it's good quality, I may want some more. How much can you supply?
How much do you need?
Oh, I'll go maybe another ounce.
Mm-hmm. You got the cash for this?
I don't do business any other way.
Wait here, I'll be back.
It's all right, isn't it, Mr. Franny?
Yeah, Gary, everything's fine.
You see where he's going?
No, it's too dark. Don't you worry about it. Frank will see where he goes.
I'll be glad when this is over.
All right, hold it.
Okay, mister, let's see the money.
I got it right here. Let's see the horse.
You got it?
All right, looks all right. Here.
You don't mind if I count this?
No, go right ahead. It's all there. $120, isn't that what you said?
Just to make sure.
Yeah.
50, 70, 90, 110, 120. Yeah, right, it's all here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll see you tomorrow night, huh?
Yeah, sure.
I'll tell you, it's nice to do business with you. It's been a real pleasure, a real pleasure.
Well, it works both ways, mister.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope to see a lot more of you.
You will. You're under arrest.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On July 29th, trial was held in Department 89, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. In 1952, American smokers bought more Chesterfields than ever before in the history of the industry. Today, sales continue to mount for two big reasons. Chesterfield is the first and only cigarette to give you premium quality in both regular and king size. Only Chesterfield gives you this scientific evidence on the effects of smoking. As we told you earlier, after 10 months, the group examined showed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses from smoking Chesterfields. Change to Chesterfield yourself, regular or king size. Chesterfield is much milder. Chesterfield is best for you.
Gary Richard Field, because of his cooperation, was placed in a hospital for rehabilitation and at the conclusion of his treatment was placed on 3 years probation. The other juveniles involved were handled through the juvenile court and received sentences comparable with his. Jack Alexander Williams was tried and found guilty of violation of the State Narcotic Act, a felony, and was sentenced to the state penitentiary for the term as prescribed by law. Violation of the State Narcotic Act, a felony, is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not more than 6 years in a state prison. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Harry Bartell, Virginia Gregg, Eddie Firestone. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking. For a million laughs, tune in Chesterfield's Martin and Lewis show Tuesday night on this same NBC station. And sound off for Chesterfield, either regular or king size. You'll find premium quality Chesterfields much milder. Chesterfield is best for you. Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Tonight, it's Adventure with Barry Craig, confidential investigator on NBC.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.